Coming up on this episode of The Social Hour, can we thank Canadians for Facebook going mobile? Plus, Headline News wants to go millennial. Ooh. And is there a lie detector for Twitter that can be built that would work? All that and more coming up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for The Social Hour is brought to you by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 151, pre-recorded on Thursday, February 20th, 2014. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free 2-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code SOCIALHOUR2. Hey, everybody, welcome to another episode of The Social Hour from Twit World headquarters in Petaluma, California. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Hello, Sarah. What's the weather like? We always start with that.
Well, it's funny. So anybody who's watching us live knows that we are shooting the show a little bit early. I will actually be on vacation when we would normally shoot the show. So because of that, I drove up to Petaluma from San Francisco several hours earlier than I normally would on a Thursday. And Amber, I have to say, even though it was kind of dark when I left the house, there wasn't a lot of traffic on the road, and it was pretty nice weather out there.
Good. Well, we are about to have a pretty big storm in Toronto, funny enough, and it's not a snowstorm. We're going to be having thunder and lightning, and there are flood warnings because there's so much snow on the ground, so the wild weather continues. So for all the meteorologists who listen to the show, and I know there are a few, they'll be happy to know that we're still in the midst of some pretty severe weather up here.
You guys and your weather. I mean, I don't want to say I'm jealous because I know that it can be very annoying to get around, but you do keep things interesting.
We do. Never a dull moment.
Never a dull moment. You know, speaking of Canada, of course, Amber's in Toronto, but Amber, you threw a link in when we were putting together our show for the week. It was kind of interesting that Canadians may actually be the people that we look to for the future of how to use Facebook.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting, and this has always been true in Canada. It is such a popular country for Facebook. In fact, there are approximately 1 in 2 Canadians currently use Facebook, but what I didn't realize is how much Canadians use Facebook. So based on this study, they say Canadians check in as many as 20 times a day on their phones, at least a good portion of them, which is fairly significant as well. So I just wanted to mention this. I know we have Canadian listeners and viewers, and like I said, this has been true for the past few years with Facebook. It's always been quite popular here, and really we've kind of led the pack as far as one of the countries who use the service a lot, maybe because of our cold winter, Sarah.
Well, that's probably, yeah. So I was thinking, so what's the deal? I mean, Canada obviously is you know, when you talk about North America, obviously you're lumping in the U.S. and Canada, and a lot of those numbers do get lumped in together, especially when you're talking about Facebook, which is such a global company. But what do you think really is the reason that Facebook has taken such a hold of the social network of Canada, especially via mobile? Because it's not just about being snowed in, right? It's about having access to a mobile device, but choosing to access Facebook specifically.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I'm sure a lot of people have different theories about this. I would say for the most part, I would imagine that there are lots of Canadians, and I'm sure this is true for Americans as well, who also live in rural areas. So when all of a sudden you are able to have access to Facebook on your phone through a mobile app, I mean, it just becomes that much easier to check in on a regular basis. So I think that may be part of it. And I would like to believe, Sarah, although this may not be able to be scientifically proven, but perhaps we are just great at networking. You know, we've always been known as a friendly country, so maybe this just transfers into the digital space. So I'll go with that.
I mean, if the rest of Canada is like you, Amber, I would have to agree. You're definitely on the forefront of social and connecting.
I would say they were exactly like me, except I don't watch hockey, and I believe that makes me kind of not Canadian so much anymore.
speaking of hockey, are you watching the Olympics at all? Because I have to say, this year, for a variety of reasons, I really haven't watched any of it. And I feel so out of touch, but I don't really feel like my social networks are talking about it much either.
Yeah, I feel as though I've been kind of jumping in here and there as far as watching different parts of the Olympics. I mean, obviously with the time zone difference, it's a difficult thing to be able to watch live. But at the end of the day, I probably haven't watched as much as I have in past years. And I know this is a really terrible excuse, but I think oftentimes I'm finding out so much on Twitter. I know people aren't talking a ton about what's going on with the Olympics, but enough that I feel like I'm updated on a fairly regular basis. But yeah, it seems it's not like when they had the Winter Olympics in Vancouver. That was it was much closer to home, and definitely a lot more eyeballs on that Olympics for sure.
Well, let's move on to, speaking of eyeballs, HLN, which is Headline News Network, which is has always been sort of the breaking news arm of CNN, is pivoting. And you know, I hadn't heard about this, but apparently they recently said that the network said that they were going to become more of a social network-focused 24-hour news station. So I hadn't heard that, Amber, but this article in Ad Age tells a little bit more about what their specific plans are. And I have to say, on paper, it sounds pretty lame.
I know. I totally agree with you. It's interesting because I like the idea when you say, okay, they're going to have a content that is for a more socially savvy audience. But when you read through some of the early programs that are in the development stage with them, I mean, one, for example, called Keywords, a game show that tests your knowledge of keywords, a show called One Click Away about stories behind online classifieds like the unused wedding dress for sale on Craigslist or strange roommate ads. And it goes on and on. They also mentioned that they're rolling out an app called What's Your FOMO? So What's Your Fear of Missing Out, which collects personalized list of users' fears of missing out. It seems a little immature to me, Sarah. Is that your impression as well when you first read this?
Yeah. I mean, the idea of satirical cartoons is not... That's actually always very popular on the internet. But having Headline News launching a show called I Can Has News Tunes. I just don't, it's like, I don't know one person who would want to watch that. I hate the premise. Or well, game shows about keywords, that could be fun. I mean, I've participated in stuff like that before, but it all sounds just so opportunistic, really. Putting two vacation adventurers and their travel agents against each other to stretch a vacation dollar based on viewers' tweets. See, that's the sort of thing that I don't want to say Headline News should not experiment with this, and certainly networks really should experiment with new forms of media in general, but it's like these networks already don't really use social media very well. It's like you often will watch a broadcast and there are tweets being thrown out or feedback being thrown out, and you can tell that they're just trying to play along. It's not so much that they actually have, yeah, like, are that many viewers going to tweet about this, you know, vacation couple traveling the world?
I don't know. I mean, I think at the end of the day, we put too much emphasis on having that social media integration within television shows. But I think people will watch shows if the content is good, right? I mean, we've seen that over and over again. Look at Netflix with House of Cards being released recently. I know a lot of people who binged over the past couple of weekends watching that particular show, myself included. So I think it should all be content driven. So just to get away from kind of the gimmicky elements of some of these new shows that they've developed, because I think people will watch good content. And then if you have the social integration kind of nicely planned into that, then it can work. But I think they just, it feels like they're kind of grasping here. It's a little bit too much.
I think it's very dangerous for any old, I know Headline News is not necessarily some really, really old network, but it's still cable. For a cable news network to say, we are now would like to be the home for the social media generation, meaning millennial viewers, you're talking about viewers in their 20s and even younger, that is really tough. I don't know any network that can do that successfully. And it seems like, for the most part, it always comes across as forced and a little desperate. And, you know, what is the network for the social media generation? I don't think it's a television network at all. You could say YouTube. That's maybe one of them. But it would be hard to get us all to be turning on headline news on a regular basis to talk about some sort of show that has to do with fear of missing out.
Yeah, I mean, maybe the Comedy Channel, the Comedy Network, maybe they do a pretty good job if I had to think of one. But I think you're right. I mean, it's hard to get that audience to want to sit down and watch television. And if they do, I think it's one of those things where you will have to be aware that obviously they have screens in hand, and it's just a different type of experience. So we'll see how they do with this. I mean, I would be tempted if I were them to be more personality driven with the content, in the sense that maybe if they got a few big names in the social media world to come and do shows for them, that seems more interesting to me than just kind of the gimmicky titles. Like, imagine if they had Gary Vee doing a show for them, and I'm sure we can think of many other people. That seems like more of an attraction in some ways, but it doesn't seem like the route that they're necessarily going.
I think so. Yeah.
Aren't they calling us, Sarah?
Good question. Exactly. Headline News is launching a new network based on social media, and we haven't gotten a phone call yet. Please. Headed for a bad place, that network. It's all downhill from here.
It is. Definitely. All right. So we have a couple other stories. One that I think is kind of interesting. I don't know if I necessarily have thought about this before till I read this particular study that has been put out from Dove, that basically it's built around this idea that 82% of women believe social media is influencing how we define beauty today. And what they did is they did a survey with 1,000 women between the ages of 18 and 64 in the U.S. and just talked about the impact that all of the images they're seeing through social and really how that does redefine their thoughts on who is beautiful and what is beautiful. And I guess, like I said, I haven't thought about it, but it does make sense to me that we are constantly impacted and influenced by pictures we're seeing, whether it's on Facebook or other social sites.
I think so. I think so, too. When I first read this, I was like, okay, Dove, the soap company, has some campaign about, you know, women embracing themselves in their own skin type of thing. So is this really, you know, sort of a self-serving survey? But the more I thought about it, the more I thought, it's true. I don't really pick up that many issues of Vogue magazine and flip through them anymore. I don't even have magazine subscriptions. Sometimes I will pick up one at the gym or, you know, getting a pedicure or something like that. But really, my attention has shifted to Instagram feeds, websites, even celebrity gossip, that sort of thing. The general places where you see these beautiful people that are supposedly poisoning the minds of young, particularly women, but young people, because they're trying to live up to expectations that are unreasonable. But I'm guilty of putting together a photo, you know, and uploading it to Instagram that might be at a certain angle, that's filtered correctly, that I think, oh, that's kind of flattering. It's a lot more flattering than the original photo was. Is it really, it's not necessarily a fake photo, but it's almost the same idea as photoshopping somebody to look better than how they would look if they were standing right in front of you. And I can see where that would kind of be warping us a little bit, because we have all these tools to enhance ourselves, to, you know, to put forward the best version of ourselves, and you couple that with the idea that most people are putting up all these happy moments on Instagram and Facebook, and my life is so great, and look, another vacation in Mexico. So you see just one side of what reality is, and I think that can be confusing for people's self-image.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to impact a younger generation, and I guess that's where they're kind of going with this study. It also looks like they've created a short little documentary film that's 7 minutes long that will be shown at the Sundance Film Festival. It's interesting. The film is called Selfie, of course, and it follows a group of teenagers and their mothers who are asked to take photos of themselves that highlight their insecurities about their appearances. But you're right. I mean, if you do think about a younger generation and, you know, Snapchat and Instagram and all these different apps that they're looking at, they're all photo-based, right? And it's got to kind of wear on some of these teens. You know, I think it's a difficult time to be a teenager, let alone the fact that you have to face all these pictures of people just looking absolutely glamorous and beautiful. And a lot of it's just not real. I mean, that's part of it. I mean, check out The Social Hour 2 episodes ago now, Sarah, with my eyelashes, the Snuffleupagus eyelashes.
Yes, that's right. They were lovely, but they were not real.
It's like a different person, right? You know, half an hour in the makeup chair and everything looks different. So I think it's one of those things that it's got to be tough for teens today, especially young girls.
Yeah, and it's different because clearly there are a lot of celebrities on social media, but it's kind of like the rest of us have bought into that too, because reality is like it's almost we've been trained to feel like it's boring. So you've got to, you know, spice it up and make it more interesting with the tools that you have. I don't know, maybe I spend too much time in photography apps, but I'm like, boy, I mean, I can make myself look amazing compared to the real thing if you give me 5 minutes.
It's all the angles, right?
Right, exactly.
All the angles. I think this is a bit of a word of caution for some people as well. When you're taking profile photos for LinkedIn or Facebook, as much as you want to look great, you still want to look like yourself. I mean, you don't want your potential employer to have that reaction when they see you and you had this amazing LinkedIn photo and you look nothing like it. So you should at least try to get as close to reality as possible.
Yes, that might go for a dating site profile as well.
Yes.
Just
Tinder.
Saying. You know, reality... It's going to catch up with you eventually, so you can only look so good in that photo.
It is true.
All right, moving on to, this is a story that you found, Amber, and the idea is researchers at where you funded international team of researchers are trying to figure out how to build a program that can scan tweets that are coming in 24/7 from around the world for truthiness, that's my word. But yeah, the idea is for so many news organizations and journalists and just the rest of us who are consuming news and content all the time, we have to, more than ever, try to figure out what's true and what is not. And a lot of that is based on the way something is worded. It's kind of like, it's the same idea as if someone's lying to you and they're looking at you, there are some telltale signs, you know, the blinking a lot or not being able to maintain eye contact, and that there are certain telltale signs that can be in a short burst of text as well that you can throw out. Do I have that correct, what they're trying to do?
I think that's exactly it. The project is called FIMI, and I believe that's the correct pronunciation, which I looked up online, and it's going to take about 18 months to complete, and you're bang on. I mean, it will help people be able to identify if there are, in fact, lies within tweets, so this could be interesting, especially for news organizations out there. I mean, people, I'm guessing that people lie all the time. I think they do this, whether it's on Twitter or LinkedIn or Facebook, but this is a program that will help to identify some of those things that just aren't true. I'm not sure how perfect it will be, but it will be an interesting study nonetheless to try to be able to detect lies, because obviously we know, and we've seen this over the years with social media, there's such a negative impact when you put something out there that isn't true. I mean, think about how many times people have killed off President Barack Obama, for example, by putting out tweets that are untrue about something having happened to him. So we know that there are a lot of people who are trying to spread misinformation, and maybe this could help a little bit, but I think that ball is already rolling too fast and too far along, but an interesting study nonetheless.
Yeah, it's especially because we keep hearing stories of how Twitter is, am I getting this right? Twitter is entering into agreement with CNN. And so then it turns into, oh, okay, well, Twitter wants CNN to have its fire hose of tweets. That's a great thing. And then Twitter gets more exposure and CNN gets more kind of on the ground breaking news, and they can figure out how to organize that using software and middlemen companies and that sort of thing. But again, how do you quickly vet a lot of these tweets for being true? And the thing is that, you know, you mentioned stuff with the president. You know, there was at one point, I don't know, last year, there was some rumor that spread on Twitter really quickly that got retweeted by a news organization that there was, you know, like a bomb at the White House or something. And it ended up not being true. But it's like when you went back and looked at the original tweet, I remember thinking, why did everybody jump on this? It doesn't seem right. There was something weird about it. And that, of course, is easy for me to say in hindsight, but maybe if there's a program smart enough to know the difference, it would have said, this is flagged. Let's do a little follow-up on this before you just pass it along and scare everybody.
Yeah, I think there's one actor, and I can't remember who it is. I want to say it's Samuel L. Jackson, but maybe not. I know there's one actor that people keep trying to almost kill off through social media. And it seems like it just happens. Like people are just waiting for these catastrophic things to occur, and they just kind of jump the gun in certain cases. So hard to get rid of the lies, but I guess it's encouraging to see that there is a research organization that's going to attempt to do so, and at least they're spending 18 months on it, Sarah. So it's not an overnight type of thing.
Well, good. Yeah, because it's probably going to take a while to figure out. Well, quick reminder, we record the Social Hour live on Thursdays at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. This particular show is being recorded ahead of time to accommodate a flight that I will be on during our normal hours next week. So everybody who's joining us live, thanks for being here early with us. If you have stories to contribute, though, stuff that you want Amber and I to talk about, you all have been really good about sending us links via Twitter and via email throughout the week. But a reminder that our email is thesocialhour@twit.tv. And our website, if you want to just catch up on any shows that you might have missed or some stories that we may have talked about, links that you want to pass along to anybody, twit.tv/TSH is the website to go to. That's where all of our show notes are. That's where you can get video for each episode. That's where you can subscribe to the show. In fact, many of you say you can't watch, but you do like to listen. In fact, we got a email from somebody who says that she runs to the show on a weekly basis. We'll get to her email in a little bit. But yes, it's a wonderful place to hang out. It's a friendly place.
Yeah, I think we're getting a lot more feedback, too, through Twitter, and people are always sending us news stories. It's awesome to see everybody's feedback, and we try to fit as much stuff as we possibly can fit in the show, and it just seems like there's never a shortage of good stuff out there.
Agreed. Well, let's take a moment to thank Squarespace for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. We've got some great stuff coming up. We've got some social tips and some spotlights, but first, we want to talk about the all-in-one platform that makes it easy to create your own very professional website or online portfolio. Squarespace is awesome. I've been using Squarespace for a long time. In fact, I recently just rolled my whole online identity that goes back many, many years to a new, really simple little Squarespace layout. I'm very happy with it. I still have some work to do with it, but I'm, you know, it's part of my future of online. And what's nice about it is that I didn't do any coding. I looked through Squarespace templates. I tried out a few of them. You can preview a few of them and see what it'll look like when you start adding your own stuff or rolling your own content in from an old blog. And it looked beautiful. And I chose the one I liked. And that was sort of it was as easy as it was. It's very easy to use. If you do want help, if you go ahead and start building a Squarespace blog, website, portfolio, and you've got some questions, I can't say enough nice things about the Squarespace support team. They've actually helped me over the years with all sorts of questions. Some of them very, very random when I tried to get in there and I did something wrong and my whole style sheet got messed up. And e-commerce is actually another area that Squarespace has really put a lot of effort in. Now available for all the subscription plan levels, e-commerce is available, which includes the ability to accept donations. So maybe you're saving up for something special. Maybe you're building a website for a nonprofit or some sort of a fund. Maybe you want to make a podcast and you want to see how much money you can raise. That can all be put together with a Squarespace site, and they can also host, you know, your videos too. It's mobile ready. The new Squarespace Metric app for phone, iPhone, and iPad allows you to check your site stats, your page views, where your visitors are coming from, unique visitor numbers. All that stuff is really good to know if you want to take advantage of a professional blog. And the code is beautiful. You won't see an ugly Squarespace website on the web. It just doesn't happen. And like
I said, your site looks good, Sarah.
Oh, do you like it? Yeah. It's okay. You know, I've got some work to do. I don't have any images up there yet, sarahlane.com. But yeah, that's all Squarespace. I mean, I literally just sort of like hit a button and all of a sudden I've got a new like I said, it's very minimal. Yeah, you got little drop down menus. There's some stuff about me, some shows that I produce. That was just, you know, that took me 2 seconds. And hosting is included. That's perhaps the best part of the whole thing. Squarespace takes care of hosting, so you do not have to. So here's what you should do if you don't have a Squarespace blog already. Start a 2-week free trial. Doesn't require a credit card. You just sign up, start building your website. You got 2 weeks. Have fun. See what kind of templates are right for you. When you decide to sign up, use the offer code SOCIALHOUR2, so that's social hour and then the number 2, and you'll get 10% off, and it helps you show support for us. Social Hour 2, when you sign up for a Squarespace account, but do take advantage of that 2-week free trial and see what you can create. Thanks to Squarespace for their support of the Social Hour. A better web awaits for you, and it starts with a Squarespace website. All right, Amber, what is our social tip of the week?
Okay, this is a good one. This is an article that I found on The Guardian. And I don't know if you know this, Sarah, but there is a social media sustainability index. And this is an index of companies who have demonstrated that they are socially responsible and they have programs in place through social media channels that talk about how they are responsible or practicing sustainability. And it's a really interesting article. So I encourage you to go check it out in our show notes. But what I thought was neat about this is they talked about their how they analyzed 475 companies from all over the world and found out that a big percentage of them, almost half, had some type of corporate social responsibility program in place through social channels. But they said that only a few of them were doing a really great job at it. So they call out some positive examples. One that I thought would be perfect for the Social Hour, because we are a little cat obsessed, if I can say that, was one that took place over this past holiday season. And it's a video from Purina Friskies, where they feature a bunch of different famous cat stars, if I can call them that.
Yes.
And in the process, they also are raising money for different shelters around the country. And it looks like they gave away a total of 600,000 cans of cat food because of all the views they got in this particular video.
Yeah, I mean, this was huge. This is actually starring many celebrity cats of the internet. Actually, Colonel Meow has since passed away, which is very sad. There he is, little dude. But yeah, you got Grumpy Cat, you've got Oscar the Blind Cat, you've got, Nala Cat, of course, Colonel, Hamilton the Hipster Cat, Grumpy Cat. But anyway, so of course I'm enamored because these are, you know, my favorite cats ever, and they are actual internet celebrities. But yeah, this is a really good use of, you know, it's a feel-good, let's raise money for charity. Everybody understands that there's an internet component here. A lot of these cats are beloved or at least recognizable. And this is a good example, I think, of how a brand can push, you know, some sort of a sustainability initiative and not seem sort of desperate or insincere.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that the article really dives into, and that's where I thought it would make for a great social tip, is that it talks about how companies do sometimes talk about different programs they have in place, but really there's no value to the audience. The audience may not be interested in them. And I think this last sentence of the article, which I'm just going to read because I think it really demonstrates how important these programs are. It says, companies are going to have to build on the commitment they now demonstrate through dedicated sustainability communications, using the enormous marketing resources they have at their disposal through their brands to sell sustainable change through entertainment and useful information. And I think as far as tips, those are the two things that people can take away when talking about your own programs at your company. You have to think about having useful information that will be useful to an audience. And also, it's okay to entertain, right? And the cat video is a perfect example of that.
Yeah, I agree. Sustainability, it's, and you see, you just see this fall flat so often. And,
yes.
Well, you see brands fall flat on social media in general so often. But particularly, it's walking the fine line between, hey, we're a for-profit company and we don't want to sound preachy, but we know that people will appreciate the sort of idea that we're do-gooders. And yeah, something like Purina is a perfect example. 2.6 million views. That's a lot of people who saw that video. And now you associate good stuff with Purina.
And I do think maybe a younger generation is going to care more about this because I think they're a little savvier because they have all of the tools at their fingertips to research different companies and brands and figure out where their money is going, who they're giving money to, what organizations they support, all of that information. I mean, it's much more transparent than it's ever been. So I think these programs have to be an essential part of any social media strategy overall. So a great article and a great read for social media marketers who listen and watch the show.
Excellent. Well, let's move on to our spotlight of the week. This is an app that I certainly use all the time, Venmo. Venmo is just a refresher for anybody who's not familiar. It's a way to pay people remotely. So, for example, I went to dinner last night. There were six of us, and bill came. And some people had cash and some people had credit cards and it kind of got confusing. And so one person said, I'll just pick up the check with my one card. Everyone Venmo me $30. And so it all works out because it's just a little app that a bunch of us have on our phone. Well, Venmo has a new feature that just came out where you can pay people that are physically near you. It's a little bit like using AirDrop if you're on iOS, but the idea is that the app will scan and see, oh, okay, who is around you that's also a Venmo user? That makes even more sense. So if everybody was, this is iOS 7 only, but most people I would think would be updated, at least on iOS. If we're all sitting around at the dinner table, I don't even have to go through and make sure that all of these, you know, I'm looking up all of these names. They would technically just sort of show up in this little right-hand rail of folks that are near me. Let's see if I mean, nobody's really near me in Petaluma right now, but if they were, there's a little, it's kind of hard to see. There's a nearby right-hand rail here, and it says, okay, no one's nearby, and then it shows me recent people that have either paid me or I've paid them. But Amber, it's an interesting concept. I kind of like the technology just because it's kind of cool that it would pop up somebody automatically that's near me. But I wonder how useful that is. If you know, how many people are you really paying that often? I guess it's just one less step to enter their name.
Yeah, I mean, maybe small business owners could use it, right? I mean, I think if you have a house cleaner who comes to your house on a regular basis, I mean, it would be a really simple way to be able to pay them. I mean, there are so many interesting ways to pay people through mobile apps today that I think I like the idea that it's sort of within the proximity of where you are. So I think small business owners might be able to take advantage of it, but it seems like a restaurant or cafe setting, that would be a typical scenario. But
that's a very good point. That is an extremely good point. I guess what Venmo is doing really is it's almost gunning for the Square wallet, really. Square is another mobile payment company. I use every morning when I go into my cafe, because it geolocates me, I can just sort of walk up. I'm already populated in their system because I'm within the geofence. And they know me by now. But if they didn't, I'd say, oh, I'm Sarah on Square, and then I'd pay remotely, and that's the end of it. So this is basically Venmo using the same technology or similar technology with the same sort of result, so that I wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't have to look me up or anything. I would just show up in their system.
Yeah, and I think it enables an individual who maybe doesn't have the setup that a cafe would have to be able to be easily paid, right? So whether it's just a friend or it's someone you're doing business with. So in that sense, it's kind of interesting because it seems like it's really simple. And I think that's what we're all striving for when we talk about the mobile wallet, is this idea of just simplicity. You know, how do we make this as easy as possible? And most of the services are, but this seems to almost take it one step further. So I could definitely think of a bunch of different ways that this could be used. I like it.
There are so many mobile payment options now. And I'm not exactly sure. I really couldn't tell you why Venmo is still the one that I use the most because, well, Venmo is owned by PayPal now, but PayPal has its own virtual money sharing. Then there's Square and there are others, and it's nice to have the options. And I guess really as technology advances, they'll probably all start to seem a lot more like each other. And they'll buy each other up, and then we'll probably just have two more options that is like the old way of paying.
It's so competitive right now. I mean, you're exactly right. You think about PayPal and Square. I mean, many of the services are becoming more and more similar, but how do you have that competitive advantage? And I think at the end of the day, it just ends up being how do you convince people to download that app and to start using it, right? Mm-hmm. And it's the people who can win that race with the consumer that I think will be able to come out ahead in this game. But it's fun. I've done some work, just as a disclaimer, with PayPal over the past year. So it's been fun to kind of watch how things are evolving. And I think really cool opportunities for small businesses and solo entrepreneurs too.
I would say one thing probably now, because now I'm thinking about it, why do I like Venmo so much? And I don't necessarily hang out in my Venmo social feed all that often. However, they do something really interesting. And that's if you opt in, you can see, you can either be part of the global social feed of people who are paying each other on Venmo. So, for example, if I paid you $10 for dinner, you might see Sarah paid Amber $10 for, you know, dinner, which is what I would put into the description field. So we both remember what I was paying you for. But even if you don't like the idea of that, you can also choose to be part of your friend's social feed. So this is people who are somehow connected to me. So I've got, I won't say anyone's name, but so-and-so charged so-and-so for Coachella, which is a music festival. And that happened 32 seconds ago. And it doesn't really matter what's going on. I see a lot of my friends will charge other people and they'll call it rent. So it's like, oh, okay, you're doing some, you're splitting rent and Venmo is the way that you're transferring money. But it's a great way to not just have a peek into what other people's transactions look like, but great ideas for how to use Venmo.
Yeah.
So I might not have ever thought, oh, cool. I could just, yeah, somebody could, maybe somebody has an extra Coachella ticket and I could pay them this way. Or, oh, I could pay my roommate via Venmo. So it's kind of that social voyeurism, but also it's helping you understand how the app works in general.
Yeah, just assuming they don't go too far. I think we mentioned, was it Blippi on the show a couple of weeks ago? That service where people could see what you were buying. There's also a bit of a privacy concern, I'm sure, that some people may have. But I think if it's seems like it's not as specific, at least with this particular app.
Somebody in chat says, the term rent sounds like a code word for drugs.
Yeah, you know what? I was sort of thinking that when you said it.
I do have a friend who once a month pays somebody, his roommate, I assume. This is just a friend of acquaintance, really, rent. And it's, I think it's probably really rent, unless he is just extremely organized about the day that he buys his drugs once a month on the first. And that's possible, too. But I'm not going to make any snap judgments.
Oh, my gosh. We could go launch into a whole conversation
we could.
The underworld.
About code words. But we will not. Not on the show. So
definitely
I mentioned earlier that we have some people who may listen to us while they're exercising. Simone is one of those people. She says she listens to the audio version of The Social Hour every week from New Zealand, where she's she goes out jogging once a week. Thank you, Simone. That sounds awesome. She says, I saw this article on the news, and I thought you might be interested in it. KLM, which is an airline, do seem to be quite innovative in the social space. It was interesting to hear that they have a team of 130 who receive 35,000 messages each week through their social channels. So, okay, if I understand correctly, if you're on an airline and you're paying for, like, a movie or food, you can pay through Facebook or Twitter? I mean, that is hard for me to wrap my head around.
I think it's just to book flights and make reservations.
Oh, okay.
So it's not in flight. It's to book and arrange flights and you know, upgrade seats and arrange for extra baggage. So before you fly.
I see. Well, that's cool. Okay. So, So this is really a way to, when you're online booking, this is just a neat app that allows you to do a lot of other things that connect to your social accounts. And that's actually pretty smart of them if they really are getting, you know, if they're getting 35,000 queries on Facebook and Twitter every week. Apparently KLM's Facebook page is extremely popular. It has 5 million Facebook fans, or at least Facebook people, who are following the group. I kind of hate that Facebook fan thing. It's like, really a fan of the airline? Maybe not, but you want to have updates from the airline. But okay, so that's kind of cool, considering that we keep hearing about Twitter trying to figure out how to use the service for people to pay each other. Speaking of mobile payments, that's kind of a rumor that seems to be kicking around all the time. Making a seat reservation, rebooking a flight, extra bags. That all seems like a good use of social media for KLM and really airlines in general, because so many of the airline experiences. I just booked a flight, which I will be taking next week, and it's like, it's just a mess. I wish that they would join the 21st century.
Yeah, and I'm guessing they're thinking, with so many people spending a lot of time within Twitter and Facebook. I mean, think back to the beginning of this show when we talked about Canadians checking their Facebook mobile app 20 times a day. If they know people are living in those environments socially, it makes sense to try to get in there, right? And to be part of that overall experience. So I do think in that sense, it does, it is kind of a win for customers who want to be able to book tickets and be able to arrange things in that manner. So it's cool to see what they're doing and how much further they are than airlines in this part of the world.
I'm also, because I'm just paranoid now, every single service that gets billed, I say, how long till somebody hacks it and then, you know, everyone's information is destroyed or at least exposed. I guess the way it works is KLM will send a link to me. Let's say I'm a customer, either like a Twitter DM or a private message on Facebook. Then as the customer, I can select my method of payment. Then we complete the transaction that way. And then the service agent at KLM receives my message to say that the payment has been received. And then I get a confirmation that they received my payment and everybody's happy. That sounds great. So these are basically private links that are being shared via private messages on Twitter and Facebook rather than emails.
Yeah, exactly. I think what's even more fascinating about this, and you touched on this at the top of the conversation around it, is that they have 130 social media agents.
Yeah.
I mean, that's phenomenal. I can't think of another organization that has that many people who are just sitting around doing social and talking to people and making money for companies, and they answer 35,000 queries. I mean, that's pretty significant, but it's obviously a huge audience for them.
Go KLM. I'm impressed. I am very impressed. Yeah, think about all this. Where are they all sitting? Is there some sort of a warehouse where all the social media agents are taking payments from people? I guess if you're going to offer something like this, it can't just be two or three people.
Yeah.
You have to accommodate the demand, and they may have a need for a lot more of these social media agents, which are really customer service agents, but still.
It's like a call center, basically.
Yeah, but people who are well-versed in how these new networks work.
You'd probably rather be called a social media agent than a call center customer service person.
And as a social media agent, you can spend a lot of time on Twitter and say, it's my job. I gotta know what people are saying about KLM. I mean, that's sort of the perk of all of this.
It's all part of the experience.
Yeah, at least for me. People say, are you on Twitter all day? Like, how can you be on Twitter all day? I'm like, it's my job. I happen to enjoy it very much, but it's my job. So
I actually watch Twitter like I used to watch TV. And I don't know if I'm the only one, but I will literally not at nighttime turn off the television. I will browse Twitter for an hour or 2 hours before I go to bed. I'm not sure that's healthy, but I do find myself more and more like there's so much content there that's relevant to me because I like the people who I follow. And I just literally like keep refreshing on my phone and checking out articles. And it's way more enjoyable than watching TV. So hopefully I'm not alone, Sarah.
No, you're not. And I used to be such a TV junkie, and part of it has to do that with I don't have cable anymore, so I have a little bit more limited options. But sometimes I'll get comfortable on the couch and it's like, oh, I'm ready to watch this show that I've been saving, you know, on Netflix or something. And I'll kind of sit there and I think, oh, let me just check something. And an hour will go by and it's like, I'm sitting in silence. I'm perfectly happy. I don't even really want to turn the TV on because I'm doing something else. And that happens constantly more and more. And I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing. I don't think I shouldn't watch TV, but it's definitely something that I notice about myself also, because I'm content. I'm content with my internet connection and the conversation that I'm participating in already.
I know. It's really interesting to see. And I feel as though I there's a satisfaction every time I refresh to see new content coming. And it's, you're like addicted to that stream. It's like gambling and going and doing the slot machine in Vegas. It feels a little like that. And I'm sure we've talked about this on the show, but I do think chemically there is something happening. Many people have written research reports on this, but something does happen as you check for new emails and new tweets. And I'm so addicted to that. When I watch TV, I'm just like, it doesn't have that same effect.
Yes, it doesn't. And really now, sometimes I put off television shows. True Detective is the show that's on HBO. It's really good. And you kind of have to pay attention, and there's these little details. And those are the sorts of shows that keep piling up because I know I can't really sort of be on my iPad and watch it at the same time. I need to give it my undivided attention. And I'm almost never in the mood to do that. I'm like, I want to do that later because right now I kind of want to be watching TV and on Twitter.
Yeah.
You know, or and working on my website or whatever it might be. It's very hard to turn off social altogether and watch a show, which is crazy. But it just goes to show our behaviors do change. All right. Well, before we get to Rad or Fad, we want to remind all of you that we love all of your feedback. It's a huge part of the show. It helps Amber and I build the show each week because we want to talk about all the stuff that you want to talk about because it's a social show. You can write us at thesocialhour@twit.tv. You can leave us a voicemail. Let us know something that's on your mind or some ideas or maybe some feedback on something we already talked about. The number is 2626-SOCIAL, or record a video, upload it somewhere, send us the link. Talk to us on Twitter's almost the best way, I guess, these days. We've sort of decided either Amber Mack or Sarah Lane on Twitter, but pretty much any way that you want to ping us with content for the show, we are listening.
We are definitely listening. And thank you for lots of great feedback recently on Twitter, especially. And feel free to ask questions, you know, social media questions about how to do certain things, because I know we get a lot of those, or share your own success stories. If you've done something in social that maybe we've not talked about, we'd love to hear that as well.
Absolutely. All right, Amber, it's time for Rad or Fad. What's on deck today?
Okay, this is an app. It's called Crowdpilot, and I watched the little promo video on the site, and I have to say I'm somewhat perplexed. I don't really understand if this is a real thing. I'm sure it is, but I can't imagine using it. So the premise of this app is, like, let's say, for instance, in this video, it shows a guy out on a date with a woman. They can't figure out what they should be talking about. They're kind of speechless. They don't have anything to fuel their conversation, and so at some point, she goes on to the Crowdpilot app and crowdsources the conversation. So get some information or some suggestions from friends through this social tool in terms of how to jumpstart the conversation.
Oh,
weird,
my.
Right?
26th, when I go to Carson City next month, and then Olympia, Salem, Sacramento on the West Coast.
And then they're happy because they've crowdsourced the conversation.
My first reaction is, oh my gosh, if you have to do this, you're not on the right date. At the same time, though, and, you know, I've been on my share of dates, and sometimes you end up feeling like, oh, you have to have the same conversation over and over, because it always starts with, oh, where did you grow up? What do you do for a living? Do you have any siblings? When's your birthday? I mean, there's these certain questions that can feel so monotonous and just kind of, it's just meh about meeting new people. So if two people were sort of game, I guess, to be a little off the wall, I kind of like this idea. I think it's kind of fun. But you'd almost have to explain to somebody ahead of time, hey, I would like to participate in this experiment with you, person I don't know that well, and see where the conversation takes us. And then you're sort of at the mercy of people who might be manipulating you a little bit to see if you'll talk about something crazy. But I don't hate the idea. I just think it's a little wacky. I'm not sure how much it has real-world use. It's more of a novelty night.
Yeah, I almost feel like, and I think I would put it in the category of fad, because it feels somewhat to me that they're really just taking advantage of the term crowdsourcing. You know, it's a trendy word that people love right now. So like, oh, crowdsource this, crowdsource that. I mean, all these new apps that are coming out, they're just saying crowdsourcing in front of some type of verb, right? Or noun, whatever it might be. But they're just taking advantage of that term because it's popular. So I think it's somewhat of a fad. I can't see people doing this. I mean, it's a fun idea, but... I don't know if there's a practical scenario where someone would take advantage of something like this. If there is, please tell me. Let us know, because I just don't see it offhand.
I think if I went out for a drink with somebody on Friday night and I said, so... Before we talk too much, I want to kind of do this thing. What do you think? I think that he would probably say, no, you're too weird and internet-y. So maybe you have to get two people who are already familiar. I don't know. I think it's a fad too. It's just,
yeah.
I'm not going to do this. I think it's kind of a fun idea.
Sarah, you should totally do it. And then you can report back to us.
I could actually do this on Friday.
It could be awkward.
It's possible. But... it's possible. I don't know what he does for a living, so who knows? Maybe he built the app. or he's part of the team.
Just put it on your phone, and then if you're having a really dull moment, then maybe you could just be like, you know, this is silly, but it could be funny.
You know, you could actually have... it doesn't even have to be a first date. We're not thinking broad enough. This could actually be a fun exercise for friends. Maybe you just want to... you want to go out and have dinner over a conversation that is not organically happening between the two of you, and just whatever is coming through on CrowdPilot, that's what you talk about.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. I still don't think, you know, it's like you'd have to be really bored with the friend.
That when you go out with your friends sometimes, though. I mean, I've gone out before where literally everybody at the table has their phones and their social networking with different people on different services. And as much as I love all these tools, sometimes it feels a little bit like we're just bored with each other. So I don't know. But I don't think I would ever use this. I think it's a fad. And I would challenge anyone to go out and experiment with this and report back to us. Stay safe, but yes. Let us know how it goes.
Yes, please do. Please do. It's fads all around, but still kind of interesting. I'm a little fascinated with the idea. I'm going to have to play around with it. Crowdpilot.me if you are also fascinated and want to download it, or at least just check out that video again. And if you're an audio listener, then you were not watching that, but it was kind of well done. I love those. Sometimes those intro videos are the best parts of these apps, you know? They're very creative. They're well done. You've got these, the way that they convey what the service is about is half of the good time.
Yeah, they did a good job of it. Hey, Sarah, I have to tell you, I might have gotten you out of doing this on Friday night, because my assistant Mary just wrote me, because she's watching the show right now.
Uh-huh.
And she says that she will crowdsource her next date in terms of the conversation.
Yes.
And she'll use the app on her next Tinder date. I don't know if she's joking or not, but she shouldn't mess around, because I'm going to hold her to this.
Please. Yeah, yeah.
Please do.
It gets me out of doing this with my poor Tinder date, who might just think, oh my gosh, this girl is way too weird right off the bat. Which is, it's so funny. Now we throw around things like Tinder dates and everybody knows what we're talking about.
I know.
Good times. Well, speaking of good times, we had a good time. But that's going to wrap up this edition of The Social Hour. Thanks to everybody for being with us and participating and helping us build our show and figure out what we want to talk about and what's important. Remember that we're live on Thursdays at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. This particular show was shot a little ahead of time, so thanks to everybody who was there live for that. But remember, if you don't watch live, you can always watch us on demand, twit.tv/TSH, with all the information on how you can do that. Of course, you can find our show on iTunes as well. You can tell a friend, make this social. And thanks to everybody who participates. Amber, you have anything coming up in the next, week from now or next
just,
week?
You know, regular old work. That's pretty much it. And in a couple weeks, I'll be back down in Florida. But I will miss you there, Sarah, unfortunately.
Darn, I know, because that's where I'm going to be going as well. Yes. Amber and I spend so much time in Florida, and we never seem to. We almost overlap. We always almost overlap, but it hasn't happened yet. One day we'll be able to do a social hour remotely from South Beach.
Oh, that would be awesome.
I would love it. But
could definitely
do
that.
but not this month. All right, well, thanks, everybody. We will see you next time. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber McArthur, and we'll see you soon.